Chapter 12. Tax and Expenditure Limitations. By Bernard Jump Jr. Introduction. Like many other states, Nebraska has long imposed limitations on the tax rates that local jurisdictions may exact from owners of taxable property. Despite these constitutionally and statutorily prescribed caps, however, effective property tax rates in Nebraska are among the highest in the nation. The existence of relatively high property tax rates in Nebraska suggests that existing tax limitations have not been particularly effective in lowering local property taxes. In fact, this lack of effectiveness is not surprising given the fact that school districts, which collect most of the property taxes in the state, are not subject to the rate limit. The question we address in this paper is whether more stringent tax or expenditure limitations would be an appropriate policy for bringing down Nebraska's high property tax rates. By way of background, it may be useful to point out that the cause of high property taxes in Nebraska is not that the state's local governments provide an extravagant level and range of public services. Indeed, by a variety of measures, local spending in Nebraska is somewhat below the national average. Instead of extravagant spending, the principal explanations for Nebraska's high property taxes are that the state provides far less aid than the national average, and that, for the most part, local governments in the state do not employ any broad-based revenue sources other than the property tax. Nebraska is not unique in having relatively high property tax rates, despite the existence of legal limits on property tax rates. Its legislators would also not be the first in the country to be concerned enough about high property tax rates to consider possible remedies. More than a few other states that have found themselves in a similar situation have resorted to alternative forms of control over local government finance. As a matter of fact, the last two decades have witnessed the proliferation across the country of new and far more elaborate forms of statutory and constitutional controls over the revenue-raising and spending practices of local governments. Many of the most restrictive of newer tax and expenditure limitations, TELs, have been adopted by states that already had tax rate limitations in force. Evidently, we should not be too surprised to discover that property tax rate limitations may fail to produce the results expected by their advocates. We do three things in this paper. In the first section, we provide descriptions of each of the major types of TELs that are used by states to limit, or attempt to limit, what their local units may raise in tax revenues or how much they may spend. Second, by drawing from the experience that various states have had with their TELs, as well as from the academic literature, we describe how the newer TELs have worked in practice and identify the major problems that appear to be associated with each form of TEL. Although our interpretation of the evidence about the operation of most TELs does not lead us to be strong proponents of any except those known as full disclosure limitations, we conclude this paper by offering some guidelines for consideration by Nebraska policymakers in the event they decide to implement such policies. Types of tax and expenditure limitations. Although state constitutional and statutory limitations on local government fiscal activities have been commonplace in the United States for well over a century, widespread use of the full array of fiscal control devices that have recently come to be known as tax and expenditure limitations is a phenomenon that began in the 1970s. Traditionally, states attempted to control local government taxation and current operation spending by limiting the extent to which local units could exploit the revenue potential of their primary source of tax revenue, the property tax. The most common form of control, and the form currently used in Nebraska, is a limit was placed on the rate at which property taxes could be levied against the assessed value of taxable property. As the data contained in Table 12.1 show, property tax rate limits remain the most widely used form of TEL. Beginning in the early 1970s, other forms of TELs began to proliferate. In some states, one or another of the alternative TELs was adopted as a supplement or companion to a property tax rate limit. In other states, a newer form of TEL became the sole legal limit on local taxing or spending. While close examination of the contents of each state's DELs would reveal a considerable amount of variation among the states and the exact provisions in force, it is convenient for purposes of describing the principal features of TELs to classify these fiscal control devices into the following six general types. 1. Property tax rate limitations. 2. Property tax levy limitations. 3. Assessment increase limitations. 4. General revenue limitations. 5. General expenditure limitations. 6. Full disclosure limitations. Principal features of tax and expenditure limitations. Property tax rate limitations. As noted above, limits on property tax rates are the most common form of TEL in use today, and the form that is in force in Nebraska. By specifying the maximum rate in either mils or dollars per $100 of officially appraised taxable property values, tax rate limits give at least the appearance of imposing an effective ceiling on tax burdens to which property owners are subjected. In some states, tax rate limits set an overall rate that controls the taxation of all overlapping units of local government. But like Nebraska, a larger number of states impose individual rate limits on some or all local government categories, e.g., cities, counties, school districts. In practice, when its tax rate ceiling is reached by a jurisdiction, the only ways that the governmental unit can increase its property tax revenues are by increasing the assessed value of its property tax base, or, where permitted, by obtaining from local residents a favorable vote to increase the rate. Property tax levy limitations. Levy limitations specify the total amount of revenue that a local government may obtain from the property tax, regardless of the growth in taxable property values experienced by the community. A levy limit is typically stated in terms of a maximum percentage increase in property tax revenue that is allowed each year. Therefore, in instances where property values or assessment ratios, i.e., taxable property values divided by market values of property, increase sufficiently so that the previous year's tax rate would produce a percentage increase in revenue in excess of the levy limit percentage, the taxing unit must lower its tax rate enough to conform with the levy limit requirements. The well-known Proposition 2.5 in Massachusetts contains a levy limit. Assess value limitations. A few states have begun to limit the rate of increase in the taxable or assessed property value set by their local governments. Like tax levy limitations, this approach prevents local jurisdictions from capturing automatically all of the property value increases that are attributable to general inflation. Thus, to gain additional property tax revenues, local officials are required to formally raise tax rates, if that option is even available to them. Proposition 13 in California includes an assessed value limit, which applies until a home is sold. General tax revenue limitations. While local governments in many states are required to rely almost exclusively on property as their source of tax revenues, some states have granted to their local governments the right to draw on other taxes, e.g., sales and income taxes, as well. Even in these instances, however, some states specify a limit on the annual growth in a local government's total tax revenues. General expenditure limitations. A small number of states limit the percentage by which local units are permitted to increase their expenditures or their appropriations during a year. Expenditure limitations often exempt certain types of spending, e.g., debt service and pension expenditure, and some spending that is financed from non-tax revenue. Full disclosure limitations. Full disclosure, or truth in property taxation, laws are among the newest forms of tax limitations. Where full disclosure limits apply, the governing body of the local jurisdiction sets a property tax rate that will yield revenues equal to those of the previous year when applied to the same percentage of the current year's tax base, total assessed valuation of property. Any proposed increase above the amount provided in this rate must be advertised and subjected to public hearing. The intent is to place the responsibility for increasing the rate on the government body rather than on the assessor, whose duty it is to determine the taxable value. Subsequent to the public hearing, the local governing body may vote to raise property taxes. Thus, the objective of this form of control is not so much to limit the government's freedom to raise taxes, as it is to provide a procedure to ensure that the electorate is aware of and able to voice their opinion about any increase in tax rates. Tax and expenditure limitations and assessment. TELs, especially the newer versions, have been the source of much debate and controversy. They have also received an enormous amount of attention from academic researchers in the last decade, particularly in the wake of enactment of the widely publicized California Proposition 13 and its Massachusetts counterpart, Proposition 2 and 1/2. Even with all of the scrutiny that recent TELs have received, they continue to be the source of more heat than light. What is clear, however, is that we still know comparatively little about how to design a TEL that will both produce the results desired by its proponents and not carry with it a host of undesirable and unintended side effects. Objectives of TELs. Judging from the rhetoric that often accompanies enactment of TELs, both proponents and opponents expect more from them than is reasonable. Indeed, a review of the history of recent TEL movements suggests that there has been little in the way of consensus regarding the causes of the so-called tax revolt or the desired outcomes from imposition of TELs. But we can identify certain recurring targets or objectives that TEL proponents frequently aim to accomplish. Perhaps the most commonly sought-after target for TELs is the relatively straightforward and apparently simple one of limiting the burden of the property tax, the tax that is usually the major source of tax revenue raised at the local government level. When capping the property tax is the main or sole objective, the traditional approach has been to impose a ceiling on the property tax rate, as Nebraska does, or to specify the percentage that property tax revenues can increase in a year by means of a tax levy limit. As Nebraska's experience shows, however, state-imposed legal limitations do not guarantee that property tax rates will be close to the national average. Even in states whose limit laws are accompanied by tax rates that are more nearly comparable to the country's norms, the apparent success of the limits is sometimes as much because state aid has been increased substantially and local governments have been given access to new taxes, as it is because limits are in place. A second objective that sometimes is the motivating force behind TEL movements is a desire to force local governments to become more efficient in their use of resources. Growth in the size of local government budgets and in locally raised tax revenues is frequently taken as prima facie evidence that government units are managed inefficiently. According to this view, local decision-makers are not sufficiently motivated to take the necessary, but unpopular, steps required to curb waste, to hold public employee compensation in check, and to eliminate redundant and ineffective employees and programs as long as they have the alternative of tapping taxpayers for additional revenues. As a consequence, those who embrace this view can be expected to favor limits on elected officials' ability to tax and spend. There exists no evidence, however, that TELs have actually brought about such management improvements. Some who have taken the lead in drives for sweeping and highly restrictive TELs openly seek a limitation on, or even reduction, in the size and scope of government activities. A cap on either expenditures or revenues would appear to be consistent with the goal, limits on both would be even better. With an intent actually to effect something as dramatic and unusual in a political sense as curbing the role of governments, proponents are likely to press for TEL packages that contain far more restrictive revenue and spending caps than those intended simply to hold tax burdens in check or to stimulate local officials to seek efficiency gains. Needed, a theory of TEL design. Regardless of their objectives, TEL supporters are handicapped in designing suitable limitation laws, because there exists no settled and comprehensive body of theory and principles governing the architecture of TELs. The absence of generally accepted TEL design guidelines also helps to explain why both the proponents and opponents have so frequently exaggerated the predicted outcomes of particular TEL movements. whether the goal for which a TEL is intended is to limit tax burdens, to stimulate efficiency improvements, or to restrict the size and functions of governments. That is perhaps the most problematic aspect of TEL design and evaluation is that there is no consensus among even public finance specialists with respect to the factors that actually determine the effects of TELs. The result, as one specialist has observed, is that the political debate of TELs occurs in something of a vacuum. Combatants pick sides almost randomly because they have little information about what their values imply for the design of TELs. A person who favors decreased use of the property tax, but little change in the level of local government spending. Both arguably questions of value, for instance, would have little idea about whether or not to support a TEL, or, more important, how to design a TEL that he or she could support, even if the available academic literature was consulted. Despite the fact that the available academic literature does not provide all that we would like to know about how TELs work, there has been enough experience with TELs to enable us to identify some of the major difficulties that are likely to accompany the various forms of limitations. Unintended consequences. The history of TELs is a history of frequently successful efforts, given enough time to devise ways to reduce or neutralize the nominal restrictions contained in limitation laws. That the restrictions contained in even the most seemingly draconian TEL may be weakened over time is not really surprising. After all, few are the number whose enthusiasm for tax relief is accompanied by an equivalent degree of enthusiasm for cutbacks in the services their governments furnish to them. Very often one result of a limitation on property tax will be resort by affected jurisdictions to alternate revenue sources. Indeed, state policymakers who favor TELs that effectively curb local government's access to the property tax base should be prepared for demands from their localities to allow them access to other revenue sources not currently authorized by state law. They should also be prepared to feel steadily growing pressure on the state to assume at least financial responsibility for some services that local governments have been required to provide and pay for. Where they are permitted to do so, local communities that are constrained by TELs have long resorted to a variety of evasive measures. Even when the state denies to a local government the right to enact non-property taxes, the municipality may resort to the creation of special districts that are free, either to levy property taxes on their authority or to impose user charges that will finance services formerly provided by the general purpose government. Admittedly, a measure that brings about the substitution of a revenue source other than the property tax makes property owners better off in terms of their property tax burden. At the same time, however, the substitution of an alternative revenue source is likely to alter the distribution of the community's aggregate tax burdens among income classes. If the substitute revenue source is more regressive than the property tax that it partially replaces, the community's lower income groups will fare worse in the trade-off than will those in higher income groups. This is not an option that many lawmakers would admit to favoring. A major shortcoming of the usual TEL is that it is not designed to take account of differing fiscal conditions among a state's communities, as John Unger emphasizes in another paper. In the Nebraska Comprehensive Tax Study Series, all counties in Nebraska do not have the same fiscal condition. Some counties are in good fiscal condition because they have relatively low responsibility for providing services, relatively low public service costs, and relatively high revenue-raising capacity. In like fashion, some counties, or cities or school districts, are in poor fiscal condition. Therefore, a TEL will not affect all jurisdictions equally, and its impact may add to the fiscal distress of those already in bad shape, and add to the inequity that exists among a state's communities. TELs can also lead to the unfair treatment of some households. The assessed value limit in Proposition 13, for example, has led to dramatic differences across households in assessment-to-sale ratios. Despite expectations to the contrary, tax and expenditure ceilings may impair rather than improve the efficiency with which a community allocates its resources. For example, certain categories of expenditures may be exempt from the direct effects of TELs. Exempt categories frequently include debt service, cost of public employee pensions, capital spending, and, perhaps, services that are financed on a shared or matching basis with the assistance of intergovernmental aid, in the face of restrictions on their freedom to choose how they will make budgetary allocations, local government decision makers may adopt a strategy that involves allocating more spending for exempt items than would have been favored had the full range of choices been available to them. An even more undesirable result of TELs than their contributions to inefficient resource allocation is that they weaken the role of local government vis-a-vis the state by denying to individual communities the right to decide independently the service-level tax burden package they prefer. This outcome is especially ironic because TELs are so often put forth as measures intended to protect local residents. Equally ironic, imposition of TELs may allow local lawmakers to evade responsibility for fundamental budgetary decisions, although TELs are commonly proposed as being necessary to force local officials to accept greater responsibility for the hard choices involved in resource allocation. Instead of having to accept full responsibility for cutting popular programs, for imposing fees on some services that were previously financed with general revenues, or for otherwise altering the distribution of the burden of financing public service, TELs present local officials with the opportunity to avoid making controversial budgetary decisions and to lay the blame on legal limitations. Summary and conclusion. In our judgment, tax and expenditure limitations appear to promise more in the way of social benefits than they are usually able to deliver. Although it would be difficult for anyone to quarrel with objectives such as keeping tax burdens within reasonable bounds, eliminating wasteful spending, and generally promoting efficient use of public resources, one should be skeptical about the likelihood that TELs will be permitted to achieve such objectives. Despite the technical simplicity involved in designing a TEL that is capable of, say, holding taxes or spending at some predetermined level or rate of increase, there is ample evidence to suggest that voters will ordinarily support, if not demand, action to make limits less restrictive when their effects take a sufficient toll on desired programs. Even when TELs are enacted at the direct behest of taxpayers who see themselves as hard-pressed to carry the weight of the cost of financing local services, state decision-makers should not expect voters to be equally enthusiastic about service cutbacks and the other fairly predictable responses and adjustments that local governments can be expected to make in the face of the pressure that restrictive TELs produce. Instead, given sufficient time for the initial effects of TELs to be realized, legislators should be prepared for demands that they relax the restrictions, permit some exemption from the formal limitations, and shift some of the burden of service provision to the state. Controlling property tax burdens in Nebraska, some guidelines. As we noted at the beginning of this chapter, property owners in Nebraska face effective tax rates that are among the highest in the nation. Evidently then, Nebraska's constitutional and statutory limitations on property tax rates have failed to do the job for which they were intended. Under these circumstances, it is appropriate to ask what Nebraska can do to provide some tax relief to hard-pressed property owners while avoiding resorting to measures that would impair the ability of local governments to provide a reasonable menu of services. We conclude this chapter by offering some guidelines for consideration. In general, Nebraska is unlikely to achieve substantial reduction in its property tax burdens unless local governments are permitted access to other revenue sources such as sales and income taxes. But even if local governments in Nebraska are allowed to tap other tax sources, as we recommend, some jurisdictions might still find it difficult to provide adequate services without having to impose heavy tax burdens on their residents. Nebraska's communities are not equally situated with respect to their revenue-raising capacities or their expenditure needs. Therefore, provision by all communities of equal levels of services will continue to produce substantial disparity among communities in the tax burdens imposed on their residents. A desirable step in the direction of equalizing burdens among the state's communities could involve either state assumption of financial responsibility for some of the functions presently assigned to local governments, or, at least, more generous formula-based state aid programs that take localities' fiscal capacities and conditions into account. The most glaring form of inequity among local governments in Nebraska involves the quite unusual and, we think, indefensible county-township arrangement. Because townships are granted their own property tax rate limit, those counties that are fortunate enough to contain townships have, in effect, access to a greater share of the property tax base than their non-township county counterparts have. If tax rate limits are to be retained in Nebraska, we support the recommendation made in another paper in this series that the county rate limit be raised to the level equal to the sum of the current county and township rate limit, and that this rate apply to all counties, whether or not they have townships. Better still, Nebraska could substitute a full disclosure law for its current system of property tax rate limits. This would permit local residents to play a more significant role than they do now in the process whereby their communities decide how much to spend and to tax. Such participation by voter taxpayers would also improve the likelihood that taxpayers would understand the relationship between local government budgets and the level of taxation. Undoubtedly, too, full disclosure in an open forum would also improve the accountability of elected officials to the voters. In any case, local officials would know the sentiments of the local electorate, and the electorate would be able to pinpoint responsibility for decisions about tax and expenditure levels. Finally, even though the current limitations on property tax rates have not prevented tax rates from reaching levels that are high by national standards, state legislators should resist the temptation to grasp for an even more stringent form of fiscal limitation to impose on Nebraska's local governments. Our review of the experience of states that have chosen to impose tells that are of a more stringent kind than those in place in Nebraska does not make us confident that they are more effective in holding down tax rates, in restraining local spending, or in stimulating more efficient local government. But we are persuaded that it is difficult to design fiscal control devices with foolproof safeguards that prevent unexpected and sometimes undesirable side effects that add to, rather than reduce, the existing inequities and inefficiencies of local government finances. The task faced by the legislature is a challenging one. Nebraska's property tax rates are high, and property owners deserve some relief. But in deliberating about how to provide such relief, the state's legislators need to recognize that the root of the problem is structural and not a matter of local units going out of control with respect to their spending levels. Therefore, imposition of a more stringent tell would be no more than a temporary palliative. A long-term solution will require new local tax sources or more state assistance to local governments.